70 record closing highs so far for the Dow.
Blasting through a ceiling.
In a record-setting IPO.
Investors who have been riding the wave.
When the stock market is booming, we're made to believe the economy is booming.
As the stock market goes, so goes the wealth and the health and economy.
So what exactly is the stock market measuring?
If you don't fund the railway, how would you get low transport costs? Wonderful people, Banco Mundial, IMF, all this. Where will low cost operations come from if you don't have a railway? I have been here for the last 64 years. I've been watching as a student leader, as a freedom fighter, now as the leader of a country. How many railways have been constructed or funded in Africa? The few that have been was by China, the Tanzania Railway to Zambia, and recently China, another one here in Kenya, and then Tanzania on their own, they are building a railway line. So, if you are talking of helping Africa, the railway, because if you fund the railway, you will have low cost of transport, and you can produce products which are cheap, which can be bought in the world. So you audit how much funding all these billions you are talking about, how much of it has gone to the railway. Audit it. The second cost pusher.
Capital FM, and you know what happens every Tuesday. This is the beautiful and wonderful Financial Forecast with myself, Nyambura Ndongo, alongside Ken Gishinga, where we get to discuss matters affecting our economy. And what we just had was a clip from the world. We had the World Bank and Africa heads of state meet and discuss a few things to do with our debt and what we can do with the money that the World Bank is actually giving us. And we're going to be looking at more into some of all this information that our lovely president from next door was actually educating us and asking the World Bank to rethink how they are giving us these loans. You're listening to us at 98.4 Capital FM, and you can catch us online at www.capitalfm.co.ke/listenlive. You can get us on WhatsApp. You can get us on X, on Facebook, at Capital FM. Hashtag Financial Forecast. The WhatsApp line is 0701-984-984. Hello, Ken. How are you?
Good evening, Nyambura. It's a pleasure to be here. And indeed, today, we're asking the question, must we rethink how we manage our economy?
True.
Must we rethink? And President Museveni is asking some very poignant questions, and he's not alone. And over the course of this show, we shall really look at various ideas on what needs to happen as we need to improve not only just the economy, but the lives of Africans.
Well, I can tell you, we had a very interesting month of April. We had quite a number of guests, and we really thank them for the information that we had. And last time we had Roger Budd, who is the lead associate at Impact Associates, and he was telling us about fueling the economic growth for Kenya. What was your key takeaway? Because I like the fact that he was quick to note that, you know, there's actually money, there's actually capital out there. And if at all we are going to be seeing growth in our private sector, there is an opportunity for us to actually get in there and make something work. But it is so wholesome, and you can't just do all these things by yourself. And at some point, you know, you're going to start a business, but you can only bootstrap for so long. You will need a little bit of help. You'll need a bit of money. So the way that he said that everything is going to be looked at when these venture capitalists are coming in, it really made sense, because they're going to look at your business, the model, even to as much as going to corporate governance. What was your take?
That was an excellent episode by Roger Bird, really breaking down how funding for businesses is there. And, you know, starting into that show, one of the big questions I posed was, in a world where there is excess capital, why is it that entrepreneurs struggle to get that capital? And he really gave a very lucid explanation of, you know, it's about your business model. This money is not for charity. You have to structure it right. Your character must also be right. You must be somebody who's dependable. And you have to meet there, have your financials on track. You have to have your business model on track. So I think it's really simplifying things that many entrepreneurs, a lot of young entrepreneurs really think about the end game, but the journey of getting what you need so that somebody can understand your business model. I think for me, that was a really interesting explanation. And for anybody who missed it, I think they need to go back to the records and get it.
Yeah, they can get it anywhere they get their podcast from, in our Capital FM SoundCloud page. You're definitely going to get it there. But as we keep saying, you know, you start your week, you're busy from the weekend, you don't really know what was happening. So by the time you construct your mind and go back from weekend mode, I would suggest that you write an email to info@mentoria.co.ke to get the state of the economy. It is a report you can get every Monday that is going to give you information, economic insights, data analysis and forecasts, basically what has happened within the economy and what we are foreseeing is going to be happening within the economy. So, Ken, let's get into it. You know, it's been such a long time since Roger's the both of us. And we've not had time to dissect some of the things that we actually talk about in a very in-depth way. So looking at the major markets and economies, the markets in terms of the Americas are looking absolutely positive, like they're really doing very well. The commodities up and down, I think when I was preparing earlier, energy metals and agriculture futures were all on the low. But later, I think as the market was opening, things began to look up. What do you think is rallying the positivity in the markets?
Well, you're right. The Dow Jones was up 0.46%, the S&P up 1%, the NASDAQ up 1.19%. And all this has to do with Friday. When the jobs numbers came out. Remember, Nyambura, every first Friday of the month, the U.S. Labor of Statistics publishes how many jobs were created in the previous month. Now, that number was a bit lower than expected, came to about 175,000 jobs, much lower than had been expected. And obviously, that shows the American economy is weakening. And because of that, the expectation that the Fed now might start really thinking hard about raising interest rates excited the markets. So the possibilities of lower interest rates excited markets, and that's why we saw a lot of the big tickets really doing very well. But of course, it's also earnings. Seen some companies making some earnings, but really it was that expectation that the Fed, looking at this weak labor market, unemployment went up from 3.8 to 3.9%. Obviously, people know that's not good news, and the Fed now will be jolted really into action, and the expectation is we might get some rate cuts coming soon. So I think that excited not just the American markets, but really the global markets. We saw same thing in Europe. The stock 600 did well. Even in Asia, it was a bit mixed, but very positive sentiments that's talks about a world of lower interest rates, lower borrowing costs, and just it makes it that much easier to be able to get credit moving across the economy. So I think that really was the underlying theme across the trading domains.
That is very interesting, because I think over time we have really been discussing how employment is something that the U.S. always have to really check out for in terms of their inflation, how they're measuring every single thing that is happening. And the Feds actually use some of this information to make some of these decisions. But aren't the sentiments a little bit too strong, considering it was just the other day when the Feds actually did meet last week, but one, I think, to say that they're going to be holding the rates. So would they have an emergency meeting? Then they'll be like, okay, things are a little bit thick, because in the same economy, the mortgage rates are actually going up. You know, people who are looking to own their first homes, right now they are unable to, because the cost of getting some of these mortgages is actually too high. Maybe companies do not want to get too many lenders. So don't you think the sentiments are a little bit too, they're too early. It's too early for them to be really that excited.
Well, the Fed has to play a balancing job.
Okay.
They have to look at both unemployment and they have to look at inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Really what the two factors, what you call the Phillips curve. Now, from their perspective, they don't want an economy that's overheating,
mm-hmm.
But they also don't want an economy that is slowing down. In fact, that's why you'll hear some analysts talk about the Goldilocks economy. It's not too hot, not too cold. I don't even remember that childhood poem about Goldilocks.
Mm-hmm.
So not really looking for an economy that's not too hot and not too cold. So obviously, as inflation is still quite high, it's still quite sticky, and their focus is on bringing that down. They don't want to keep interest rates high for too long, to the point that unemployment starts becoming an issue, because the borrowing costs become high, businesses are not able to make more orders, they start having to lay off people. So I think it's because of that that now they have to start thinking, is it the right time to slash interest rates? It's a very delicate science.
Yeah.
Obviously, you want what is called a soft landing.
Okay.
This is a situation where inflation comes down without you affecting the labor market. So inflation comes down, but you don't lose jobs in the process. That's the best case scenario.
Okay. Okay.
Now, just like in any plane ride, you might have a not-so-smooth landing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure you've witnessed a couple of those.
Yeah.
And for them, it's really to try to make sure that they get to that as close as possible. Obviously, it's impossible to get it perfect,
mm-hmm.
but I think from their perspective, they are trying to do a good job to get there.
Let me take you back. So did we see that number of jobs that were created were less than what they had anticipated, or the number of jobs reduced? Is it that it was not created, or the ones that were there are the ones which reduced? What happened?
So it's the number of jobs that were created
were less.
So they're expecting something in the 350,000 range.
Wow.
So this was actually going to be the 28th consecutive month of increments of jobs. So it was a significant thing that that did not happen. People will ask, how do they get this data?
Yeah.
You know, they work with various payroll suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
ADP is one of the biggest American payroll suppliers. So it's easy for them to see not only which jobs are being, because once you get a job, obviously you're registered into the payroll.
Okay.
So it's easy for them to pull reports. But interestingly, they're able to give you by sector too. So they're able to tell you, and for this one they said, there was an increment in all sectors except ICT, except media.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's happening in media.
Yeah.
ICT and really the communication space. So it seems to be even the Hollywood space was not hiring as much as that. So it tells you that, and that's the richness of data that I keep saying we need to have, not just in Kenya, but in many parts of Africa, so that we can have economics that speaks to people. You know, what Museveni is challenging us is we are practicing economics that doesn't speak to the reality of people. So I've always said the economics that puts a human being at the heart of it, are people getting jobs?
Right.
Are people busy in production? That is the right type of economics. And everything that we do has to sort of end at that point. And if it doesn't, we have to put question marks whether we have the right objectives or not.
Wow. Okay, then I think that also makes sense. But they also had the consumer price index and the producer price index also in the month of April. And, well, was it also, like, would they not have predicted if at all they would have seen how the prices are actually performing, because if at all your prices are either too high, too low, then if at all I can get more goods in my shopping bag with the amount of money that I've had with no jobs created, then it is an indicator, because it really happened at the beginning of April.
Well, I mean, CPI is a fundamental indicator of inflation. Right. And CPI is a basket of goods, and it has many things in it.
Mm-hmm.
What we tend to look out for a lot is things around energy costs.
Okay.
Those are typically the things that really can make inflation either really go very high,
okay,
or really get off the roof.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are other indicators. And you raise a very good point.
Mm.
In an economy where people are affording the commodities, but they don't have jobs,
yes,
which is very possible in developed societies where if you lose your job, you have unemployment benefits. And these unemployment benefits can go 1 year,
yeah,
2 years, 3 years. So it's very possible that somebody who's unemployed,
yeah,
is still living really the same lifestyle. And that possibility is there. That is less so maybe in developing economies.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes that, at the end of the day, it makes that trade-off between unemployment and inflation a bit easier,
okay,
for the central bank to manage. All like right. Here, where it's you don't have sort of like those kind of safety nets,
yeah,
and per se. So you're right. The philosophies of managing these two, essentially, these are the two most important indicators in economics.
Yeah,
how they are managed in the West, yeah, tend to be a bit different from how it's managed here, because you just have huge social safety nets,
mm-hmm,
that can be able to sort of absorb periods of unemployment.
That's interesting, because as we were discussing, the new economics, and do we need to kind of reset our philosophies for economics then in Africa, if what is happening in the West is meant to be an indicator for what we ideally meant to be doing, but then we actually do see the heavy hand of the West in Africa, but still we are in the most stickiest situation, like we're going to be discussing when we come back, maybe a bit later, then is there a disconnect then? Because the Americas seem to be doing it, Europe is struggling, China, I mean, they're having a balanced trade-off, Japan, we just saw what happened in Japan, but Africa, we are still reeling, just as Museveni was actually saying a little bit earlier.
That's a fascinating question, Nyambura, and really it's at the heart of my personal concerns too.
Right.
And what's interesting is what you've just asked is not even about the African continent.
Mm-hmm.
It's a global question. In fact, the IMF's latest quarterly, it's called FND,
mm-hmm,
Finance and Development, has a very interesting series.
Yeah.
On asking that question, how should economics change?
Mm-hmm.
And they've gotten about six economists to write six different essays,
yeah,
on how they think economics needs to change. Most of these are American,
yeah,
professors. And I read each of the six,
mm-hmm,
extremely fascinating. One economist said economics needs more humility,
all right,
needs to be more of a team player.
Okay.
We need to have more appreciation for history. We need to have more appreciation. So it can't be just about models,
yeah,
mathematical models,
right,
but do you understand the history of Africa?
Mm.
Do you understand the history of Latin America? Or are we just using templates,
okay,
IMF templates or World Bank templates, where one size fits all? Or should we customize it to the culture, the norms, the tradition? So that's one essay, and I found that it's a very, very persuasive. But for me, I think at the end of the day, it's really remembering that the human being has to be at the heart of that model.
Right.
Anytime you have growth on paper,
mm-hmm,
but people say, we don't feel that growth, then you need to ask yourselves, are we doing the right type of economic planning?
Mm-hmm.
When you have very nice graphs,
right,
but when you go on the streets,
yeah,
it's just chaos and difficulty. Then,
mm-hmm,
you have to ask that question. So I think It's great that it's a theme,
yeah,
for today, and it's not just the IMF,
right,
asking it, it's Museveni,
mm-hmm,
asking it. I know you'll ask it about Nigeria,
yes,
you'll ask it about South Africa,
mm-hmm,
you know, you'll ask about Kenya.
Right.
are we making the right economic policies? Are we applying the right toolbox? And for me, that is where really we need to bring economics to be.
Looking at some of the geopolitics that is actually happening in the markets in the major economies, we just saw what happened as recent as yesterday, where there was meant to be a ceasefire, right, between Hamas and Israel. Then Israel rejected the deal that was kind of negotiated by Egypt and, was it Egypt and Qatar? And we are seeing how this is going to affect the oil prices. Of course, it's going to have an effect on how the economies are also going to be operating in terms of even the creation of these jobs, because we do need this oil to fuel our economies. So I think we are still running around in the same kind of rat race.
Well, if you look at the latest, particularly in terms of the geopolitics, is there is a sense of de-escalation, which is a good thing. I think the latest communique we got on that is the prospects of ceasefire
have been approved.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing, not just for global markets, but for the lives of the people who live in that part of the world. Indeed, somebody would say most people, a trader sitting in New York and listening to the geopolitics, his most urgent concern would be on oil prices and what that will mean for his stock portfolio. You know, and somebody will ask, okay, is that the right set of orientation? Then it becomes a debate on capitalism, how capitalism is practiced across the world. What we do know, and it doesn't matter what your persuasion is global stability is a good thing for everybody, whether it's price stability, whether it's geopolitical stability. Everybody wins when there's some sense of stability. There's more investments, more capital is allocated, what is called the peace dividends. So no matter what philosophical branch you might be in terms of socialism versus capitalism, I think everybody agrees that stability is a key thing towards the global economy. And that has been lacking, particularly over the last 2 years, where price stability was sort of compromised. So I think a lot of leaders, and of course we have the World Economic Forum, you have the G7, all these people are thinking, how do we de-escalate? How do we just return the world to a normal place? So we avoid the tepid 20s that I talked about, in that fear of a lost decade of growth because of COVID, because of elections, because of geopolitics. How can we have the remaining half of this decade just be a decade of no drama, peace, and progress?
I think
I think that's in the minds of a lot of decision makers right now.
Then I think, as we had earlier alluded to, there was a significance of the World Economic Forum being held in Saudi Arabia. Now it makes a lot of sense, because at least that calms the nerves of everybody, knowing that, you know, there's at least a direction that things should be de-escalating, and it's not going to be as heated as we have seen it be. Now I'll be playing the second clip.
Second cost pusher is electricity. If you don't find electricity, and you talk about sustainable development, what are you talking about? Private sector-led growth. Maneno tu. Electricity. We must have low-cost electricity, not exceeding 5 cents per kilowatt hour. Borrowing for what? Capacity building. Imagine. Seminars. They call you in a hotel. You eat chapati. You eat mandazi. They say that is capacity building. Capacity building should be on the ground, not just seminars. So, the second point, excellencies, electricity.
Capital FM. This is The Financial Forecast, a show where we seek to delve into matters that are affecting our economy. You're with me, Nyambura Ndongo, alongside Ken Gishinga, Chief Economist, Mentoria Economics, and we are excited to be having you listening to us as we look into how economics is meant to be changing in the global world. And the first half of the show, we were just listening to our president from our neighboring country, Uganda, talking about how the World Bank and the way they are actually giving the African continent the loans that are required to be building the economy within Africa. And this happened on the 28th of April, that was last month, during the Africa Heads of Summit State led by the World Bank. And Ken, you know, it was interesting that at the beginning, we first his first input was they need to be finding things like the railway line. And then the second one that he mentioned was electricity. And he did mention that, you know, in his 64 years, other than the last 5 years, Tanzania, the railway, Kenya, and I think one that was connecting Tanzania and somewhere. Those are the railways that have been funded, and they came mostly from China. In terms of electricity, you do not get funding to actually get electricity. And he's saying we need funding that is actually going to be helping everyone in terms of this money is actually going to be in the grassroots. If at all you fund electricity, manufacturing can be done. If at all you fund the railway line, then people can actually get their produce and their products moving, and then you can export all these things that we are creating. What is the disconnect between he's very passionate, and you can actually tell he's very passionate when he's discussing. Aren't these some of the things that the World Bank has actually been focusing on in terms of Africa?
The relationship with the Bretton Woods institution has been evolving since World War II,
right.
The end of World War II. The IMF, the World Bank, it actually used to be called the Reconstruction Bank.
Oh.
So the idea was reconstructing, particularly when Europe had been decimated by the World War. It was about the bank that can rebuild Europe. So it has that idea of really fiscal policy of growth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, the World Banks don't, of this world, they don't work in isolation. They work with governments.
Mm-hmm.
So even the governments have to be able to showcase what is sort of their appeal.
Yeah.
Remember during the Kibaki time, his signature program was the free primary school education,
right.
Which the partners
mm-hmm.
able to jump on board. From the year 2000, in the last 20 years, we've seen a lot of African countries face east because of the facilities that are coming for infrastructure. So it's a good thing that Museveni is asking us about production,
right.
Because what railways do, what cheap electricity does, is it gets us closer to cheaper production, and you're able to get more goods out and create more jobs.
Right.
I think what the challenge with Museveni, though, is he's not appreciated also how that has gotten African countries into debt.
Right.
If you look at the last 10 years, the borrowing binge for infrastructure has led most countries to double their debt to GDP over the last 10 years. So, yes, you have quality infrastructure, good roads, but it has left a lot of countries with a debt binge. So I wish he went one step further and asked, beyond just borrowing,
right.
Are there other ways that we can build our railways, build our roads without necessarily going back into deeper debt, which eventually puts us in a very difficult situation. So I think he portrays a problem, offers a solution, but for me it's just a half solution.
Okay.
He needs to go one step further and say, you know, these countries collect taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't these taxes actually go towards building infrastructure as opposed to are constantly borrowing from various parties.
Right.
How do we create an economy where you have a good tax base, you're able to generate enough tax revenue and build your infrastructure in a sustainable way without compromising your future, compromising your debt levels? That final part is what I felt was missing.
Okay. Before we go into the taxes, let us play his third agenda.
Those people who talk about private sector growth, private sector growth. I have been trying to borrow money for our UDB, Uganda Development Bank, a bank which funds manufacturers. No, you don't, I don't get support for that. Instead, they want me to go, my people to go to commercial banks. But commercial banks cannot give, those commercial banks are to encourage imports. Are to encourage imports, because the only person who can borrow money and pay it back from a commercial bank is a trader who goes to China, goes to where, Dubai, brings products, sells them quickly and pays back. So, if you are serious, I need to hear about the low-cost funding for manufacturing. Not for stories, not for what, no, manufacturing. How about funding for irrigation? Because if you want to stabilize agriculture, a country like Uganda is very rich, we have got everything. But still sometimes we get some erraticness in the rain. So in order to stabilize, I've been trying to look for a loan for irrigation. I can't easily get it. Very difficult to get. A loan for seminars, very quick. The civil servants, what? But a loan for irrigation.
So, Ken, I think, in a way, do you think, as he's also looking for funding for his banks, they should be easing, you know, the way you're saying that there's a tax base. Well, we can see how that enhancing our tax base in Kenya, how it has been like very stringent, and it's very it's being done in a very fast, it's too drastic in a very short time for a people who, in an economy, as you were saying earlier, the GDP was actually said to be growing. But when it comes to Kwa ground, things are thick. Companies are closing down. Unemployment is up high. Then if at all you fund the banking industry that is actually being able to give out this money, and then now the people can actually go. Because he's saying the people who can access the credits from the banks are the people who are actually going to go and have a very nice relationship with my banker, and I'll get the loan, I'll go bring products from outside, then I'll be able to come and resell and pay off the loan. But what about now those who actually cannot? And even farming, I mean, it would be the most risky business, as opposed to, you know, it was interesting how Roger last week told us that when it came to funding on his side, agricultural sector is the one that actually showed significant like resilience. So in that scope, has he like looked at, he said he's been there for 64 years, so he's seen a lot of things. So maybe when he's talking about let's fund all these things, and then and he's saying Uganda has all these things. They have good soil, but they have a bit of erratic rains once in a while. Then help us fund our agriculture. What do you think?
You know, Nyambura, that clip you've just played and that question you've just asked,
yeah,
I think has to be the most important segment we've ever had on Financial Focused.
Right.
Museveni points two things here.
Mm-hmm.
The first part, he talks about a private sector-led growth.
Yeah.
And he says those people who talk about private sector, and I'm part of those people, because I do believe the private sector is the biggest engine.
Yeah.
Government can stimulate growth, but really most players are in the private sector. So that part is okay. It's okay to call for private sector-led growth.
Mm-hmm.
There are more activities in the private sector than the government sector. That's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But where I really agree with him is in who owns the money power, who owns the financing.
Okay.
And his problem is the money financing power is left in the private hands. And that's a significant problem. He talks about the commercial banks.
Yeah.
Because the commercial banks are incentivized in their own way. And he talks about the Ugandan Development Bank.
Right.
So he raises a question. Fine, you and your private sector-led money growth. But who should control the money power? Is it the public sector? Or is it commercial banks that have their own... People say they have better understanding of markets.
Yeah.
They can allocate. I've always called for a banking sector that has both the public sector and the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, in Kenya, it's almost as if all our public sectors, banks, have almost died. We used to have so many.
Right.
I think right now we only have the Development Bank of Kenya.
Yeah.
Same thing for Uganda. The private banks thrive.
Okay.
But the public banks that are meant to look at things like agriculture, the agriculture financing, that have a public good in mind, do not have a private motive.
Right.
They're very few and they are dying.
Hmm.
When you look at China, most of the big Chinese state-owned banks are state-owned. And that's one of the reasons China has been able to grow exponentially. Even in the United States, the bastion of capitalism, you still have very strong public banks operating, such as the Bank of North Dakota.
Right.
So what Museveni is calling for, I think, is very, very true, that if we want private sector-led growth, we also need to have public sector-driven growth by the banks.
Mm.
Because sectors like agriculture, and I remember last week you asked Roger, how do you fund such a risky sector?
Yeah.
Only a development bank that has that scale and has a public vision can be able to undertake. No private bank would be able to commit their profit towards there. And that's the challenge. And in fact, we call it the principal agent problem, where the agent works differently from the principal. So for me, I think the lesson we need to learn for Kenya, because we live in Kenya, is we need to grow our private banks because they are more sophisticated.
Right.
They are more, they have more information on what's happening on the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But we also need to have a very strong public banks.
Mm.
We need to have very strong public banks that can also fund activities that are aligned to what the government wants to do, especially things on food security, things that private banks would not have an incentive to do, things on manufacturing, for example.
Right.
Even the affordable housing financing program, like right now, we have the Kenya Mortgage Refinancing Company that lends money to the banks. But sometimes the banks might not be motivated. Banks might want to buy bonds and bills.
Yeah.
If they can partner also with the public banks, then some of these public goods can actually reach the right people. So it's really a call for a balance of our economy. We need as many public banks as we have private banks, because their motivation, their orientation is very different. Private banks exist for profit maximization.
Mm-hmm.
Public banks exist for broad-based public good policies that no individual private bank might be willing to undertake. So we do need both. And all the big economies, China and the U.S., they have both in their economies.
Then what is the indicator, if at all, our national banks are actually dying? What does that even mean for economy? Again, it's in contravention of growth and development that we are looking. And we have a whole economic team that is actually working with the president to be looking at Vision 2030.
Well, it puts our growth agenda in a difficult way, because commercial banks will continue funding activities that are commercially viable.
True.
But where are most Kenyans employed?
Private.
In agriculture and such industries, in tourism.
Right.
So who is going to be the bank that lends to the tourism industry? So we do need to have that. Otherwise, you'll end up with a sector that's very lopsided, doing very well in one area, but in areas that employ a lot of people. So actually it ends up with high inequalities because the sectors that are labor intensive might not get the capital, but the sectors that are very capital intensive might get the capital. So if you don't get that balance right, you might end up with a society that's highly unequal,
right.
Huge inequalities,
yeah.
And highly unequal societies actually become less stable.
Mm-hmm.
And the repercussions of a less stable society are visible to anybody.
And we can see that because we can see what is happening in Nigeria and what is happening in South Africa. Very powerful economies, Ken, that are actually very, if you can call them the superpowers in Africa. And they are also in turmoil. Nigeria, people are actually queuing because there's, they do not want to say it's fuel shortage, but there is a country that actually produces oil. Is having a shortfall. In South Africa, well, they're about to do their elections. We discussed how they had significant load shedding, and it is a major economy. Then, is this also an indicator of how we're doing our economics wrong in Africa? And our governance, our leadership is, again, pointing in very different directions as to where economies are meant to be heading.
It is. The Reserve Bank of South Africa, a few days ago, told South Africans to expect about 200 days of load shedding this year. And somebody might ask, you know, this is Africa's most industrialized economy.
Yep.
How can it be that we are so lacking in sophistication? So it's a deep problem. It not only points to the economy, but the politics.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, at the end of this month, South Africa will be going to the polls.
Yeah.
But there's a whole 30-year generation that's very dissatisfied with how the economy has been managed and what that has meant for unemployment rates that are in the 30%. Mm-hmm. Yes, being called the biggest economy in the continent, but having almost the highest levels of unemployment, highest levels of poverty, highest levels of crime. So huge contradiction in terms of why are we always quoting GDP? In one of those IMF articles, they quoted Robert F. Kennedy and they say GDP sometimes measures all except those that are useful for a worthwhile life.
Right.
So very interesting critique on what we need to put at the heart of it.
Yeah.
So for me, when you talk about South Africa, of course, it's an example of how the economic planning has not been in tandem with the people. And the reality is, these are big, I was looking at the opinion polls,
right.
And one of the opinion polls was talking about, 37% performance in the polls, to the point where they might need to form a coalition party just to get over that 50%. When the ANC won back in 1994, their approval rating was almost 70%. So it tells you that at some time, even economics starts to feed into people's expectations on how their standards of living should be. So I think the return of economics to economics about the lifting the standards of living.
Yeah.
And I think that's where China, with all its weaknesses, one thing the Chinese will always tell you, with all their weaknesses on maybe on their governance, they'll always tell you that they figured out over the last 40 years, a model that can lift almost a billion people out of poverty. Now, you show a model that can do, with all its weaknesses, it's been able to raise the living standards almost a billion people. So economists have to sit back and really ask, are we lifting the standards of people? Whether it's Nigeria,
right.
Are we having policies that in the end game is about lifting the standards, or is private concern so dominant that it overrides the public good? And my fear is that's been the case across Africa, where private concern dominates the public good.
Yeah.
And unless you have an economy that really looks at raising standards of living and really talks about that, then all the policies will be very contradictory, will be very haphazard, and will just create more and more confusion.
Ken, I think it was last week we were discussing still on government spending, and you actually did mention that the president of AFDB has actually raised a warning as to the debt levels in Africa. And I think we can see from even Museveni's comments and the summit that they had, and you know, the problems in South Africa, the problems in Nigeria, that government spending is something that governments need to be looking into. And we are going into our financial period where we're meant to be, budgeting. And, well, we can see in Kenya, our government spending is projected to be on the low. One thing, at least they're cutting, I don't know if it's a good thing, though, Ken, is there was a proposal to consolidate parastatals. And then there was also a proposal, there is to cut roads expenditure. We had discussed that government needs to at least minimize its spending. Then there is the Nairobi-Nakuru Mau Summit road that has been halted because the project was absolutely a bit too expensive. And then there is now a plan to cut the fertilizer subsidy by 38%. Now, all this, is this spending the cuts, are they in alignment to what the government is trying to achieve for the people in terms of development and agriculture? And as you had, there's a point you actually raised that you had said, when government is looking to cut down its budget by 350 billion, and we know government is the biggest spender, of course it's going to trickle down all the way to private people, private sector, and we are going to be seeing an economy where now the little money that was circulating in the economy now really gets like really tied up. So are these measures going to be assisting? I know, well, we have debt and we are trying to manage this debt. Is that the right way?
Well, Nyambura, this administration came up on the back of the bottom-up economic transformation agenda.
Yeah.
The idea then was, probably during the campaigns, that the philosophy had always been top-down. Yeah. Grow the economy and it'll trickle down to the people. And they presented an alternative idea of raising the standards of living from people at the very bottom, which really caught on.
Right.
I think it really went like wildfire because for the first time, an economic idea was presented to Kenyans. Mm-hmm. And that has been the situation. Now, as we prepare for the finance bill 2024 and the budget to be read, we have to look at those readings from that lens of is it raising or is it lowering? If you understand the Kenyan economy, it's been very public sector driven. And the challenge with that is now when you have huge budget cuts, it means a lot of people will get into unemployment. And that was a challenge in the 90s. Or if you go back to the 90s, it was really consolidation and people losing jobs from, you know, the Kenya Post and telecommunications. Mm-hmm. So many of these state agencies were made moribund. So obviously there'll be a level of unemployment, which will affect the person at the very bottom, sometimes maybe even the most. Now, people ask, is it necessary to go to consolidation? Because the argument that we've been given is you Kenyans have refused additional taxes. You've complained. You're always on radio talking about taxes.
If you
don't want to pay taxes, then let's cut the spending side. So it's almost been, that's been the angle.
Okay.
My analysis has always been, we've not explored the tax policy collection. We've talked about the Laffer curve, but we've not explored the right way. I think what most Kenyans were saying is tax collection is a good thing. We do need public services.
Right.
The challenge we have with this type of tax collection is it's very heavy on consumption. And consumption kills demand because people tend to find cheaper substitutes and your original goal gets lost along the way. So how can we have other tax approaches that don't hit consumption so hard? For example, the motor vehicle insurance tax.
Yeah.
That just might make people say, okay, actually, I don't need all this. So you lose on sales, you lose on fuel, you lose on so many things. So I think the feedback most Kenyans were saying is, yes, we do need revenue. Obviously, government needs revenue. But the way you're collecting it is not in a way that is boosting the economy. And I think what the government has said is, okay, then let's not even do that. Let's actually cut spending.
Let's see how
you like that. So it's moving us from one out of the frying pan really
into the fire.
Okay. I wish we went back to the tax policy conversation and say, okay, the Laffer curve effect makes consumption taxes not very good. Are there other ways we can continue raising the same revenue, hitting the same targets, without hitting the consumer who is jobless, who is struggling, who has to support a huge family.
Who's unemployed.
So I think it was a way of what other techniques. I don't think people are saying let's collect less, but how do we do the same thing in a way that's not burdensome? But I think what the administration said is, okay, you don't want it, let's actually cut spending and let's you lose jobs and let's see how you like that. So it's a difficult narrative, and I think we need to go back to the table because 250B out of public spending could be a challenge, but particularly in a, in an economy that the private sector engine is not very strong. It's all these hotels, all these workshops, they come from spending. So you have to think of all these, many of them have been built, even with the idea of hosting the seminars that Museveni has criticized. Many of them create jobs through that. So as we change the structure of the economy, I wish we we had said, I wish the conversation had been, we need to move away from a public sector-led growth to a private sector-led growth. But for that to happen, all the factors of production have to be activated. Is the capital flowing right? Is the land use right? Is the labor market vibrant? Is the entrepreneur supported? If that all those four boxes check, then by all means, we can actually reduce activity. But I don't think we've actually made enough reforms. So we still need that engine of public sector. So we are switching that off, but that second engine still is not 100%. So it's for me, it presents big concerns in terms of what happens when you have an economy of high unemployment. And this is exactly what happened in the 90s, where you have very high unemployment with its associated socioeconomic consequences, crime rates, instability. Are we in a position to manage that?
Wow. Ken, one thing off the cuff. So, in probably as one of its ways that the government is actually planning on growing, reducing spending in the public sector, there's a motion that banks and pension funds are meant to be blocked from very juicy infrastructure bonds because most of the time they're the ones, you know, they have the largest asset base. So the treasury ones, that there's a cap that the bonds are meant to be going into the retail investors. How is that going to play out for us?
You know, the number one principle in economics, really, as a freshman, economics 101, the first principle is people respond to incentives. So what we need to do is policies that incentivize. We have to ask ourselves, why is it that banks and pension funds have a big desire?
It's
because they yield high interest rates.
Yes.
So the question should be, how do we reduce interest rates so that they have an incentive? So it's about incentivizing. The moment you start writing legislation to force people, you lose the plot, because A market system doesn't work like that.
Right.
A market system comes when you incentivize people and you say there's too much concentration of bonds
mm-hmm.
with banks. How do we reduce this interest rate? So even banks have a desire for lending
right.
to the private really sector. The moment you start legislating and giving quotas, it doesn't work. And that's mm-hmm. the problem behind the legislation for interest rate capping.
Right.
It sounds good on paper.
Right.
But the moment you start implementing mm-hmm. that legislation, mm-hmm. and that's why that legislation could only last for 2-3 years,
right.
because it has all these unintended consequences mm-hmm. that come. And these things have unintended consequences because now banks now will be in a situation where really the freehand has been tied. Okay. And the moment you start operating in a market where okay. your hands are tied, you won't go to where you're being directed to.
Right.
You'll just act in a different way. So for me, it's go back to the first principle of incentives. How do you give people incentives?
Uh-huh.
All these people holding infrastructure bonds,
right.
how do we incentivize them to release those bonds mm-hmm. and invest? That should be the key question that the Council of Advisors really should be thinking of. So whether it's currency mm-hmm. markets,
right.
whether it's interest rate products, it should always be about incentives.
Okay.
And people, when they're given the right incentives, mm-hmm. they will act the way you want them to act.
Yeah. As you're thinking of the parting shot, we really want to give a warm appreciation to the guests we had in the month of April. Sospeter Thiga, who is the head of risk at CPF, Marcin Jaroge at Nabu Capital, and Roger Bide from Impact Associates. So, Ken, our parting shot for today.
Well, at a time when everybody's asking, how do we change economics?
Mm-hmm.
Many theories are coming up, and we've had leaders give their take. We've had academics give their take. At the end of the day, we have to ask ourselves, are we raising the standards of living?
Mm-hmm.
Are the policies that are capping, the Finance Act 2024,
mm-hmm.
the budget statement, is a fundamental effect to raise the living standards of, and how do you raise the living standards of Kenya? By giving them jobs,
right.
jobs that are aligned with what they have studied, mm-hmm. what they want to do, and how they can produce actively in an economy. Only that type of economics is sustainable,
right.
and we need to champion that type of economics in every platform that we have.
I think I'm not going to say anything more. We come to the end of Financial Forecast on this beautiful Tuesday evening. And remember, you can get all these in-depth economic insights and data analysis and forecasts by emailing info@mentoria.co.ke. And suppose you missed bits of this show or this show altogether and any other show that we've had, you can go to our Capital FM SoundCloud page or anywhere you get your podcast from and get to listen to Financial Forecast, all the episodes that you have missed that you want to listen to. For us, it is have a very, very good evening and a very good month of May that is going to be warm. Remember, stay safe. As the Met is giving us information about what's happening, let us remember to follow the instructions. At least let us be safe because we have the information and information is always power. Wanjiri is coming up next for The Hype. Goodbye.